This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. Using data is pretty much integral to just about any ambitious and involved digital signage network being spun up these days. But for a lot of vendors and their customers, it's still a relatively new concept and approach. That's definitely not the case for the Toronto area CMS software firm Omnivex, which has been around for more than 30 years and has always made data-driven communication central to what it does. More than 20 years ago, the core Omnivex solution included a module called DataPipe. I know that because I was using the thing way back then for a digital ad network that I launched. Probably 10 years too early, but that's a story for another time. While a lot of its competitors have developed and marketed platforms that are pretty and loaded with bling, Omnivex has resolutely stuck to its technology guns with software that's quite involved and very powerful. The net result is Omnivex gets involved in a lot of the more complicated jobs in which real-time data and the context it provides shapes what shows up on screens. Airports, for example, are a very active vertical. I had a long, detailed chat with Neil Chatwood, a transplanted Brit who runs the global transport file for Omnivex. We could have gone on for hours, as he has a lot of insights about data, security, and programming content for large, very involved environments. Neil, thank you for joining me. For those people who don't know Omnivex, can you just give a quick rundown on the company?
Yeah, for sure. So Omnivex was established back in the dark ages of digital signage, 1991.
Wow.
And you know, a privately owned organization just outside of Toronto, Ontario, and Canada.
Oh, come on, it's in Toronto. Like Toronto goes on forever.
Yeah, it's pretty much right on the border. Well, it's on the subway line now. They've expanded the subway, so that finally happened.
Yeah, it's not like you see countryside on the other side of the parking lot, though.
Not anymore. No. In the last 10 years, there's a Vaughan skyline, as depressing as that may be. Yeah. But been around a long time, you know, private, family-owned organization, and it's really grown off the back of our focus on leveraging real-time data, integrating with basically any system we could possibly think of. And that pedigree has kept us in the business for over 30 years now.
Yeah, I have a history, so to speak, in that a network I started more than 20 years ago used Omnivex. So I was familiar with Omnivex products and data pipe and everything. So we were talking before we turned on the recording that I found it amusing that a lot of the industry, the software side of the industry, has kind of awakened to the idea of data integration and data handling in the last 4 or 5 years, when it's something you were doing like 25 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, we were, back in, I think it was around 2010, 2009, 2010, mm-hmm. when, a lot of the industry was yelling, content is king, right? That was,
that's still see that.
I know you do. I do. It's a classic. And our ownership at the time, they like to have fun. And they took they took that and changed it into context is king. Mm-hmm. And we really kind of ran with that since inception. But, I joined the organization in that era in 2010. And data and complexity is where we've always really hung our hat. We are, we're a software vendor. The majority of our revenue comes from license sales. But we really do find ourselves in the trenches with our partners and our clients at, you know, getting in there, providing, you know, pseudo consultancy on, you know, what data do you have in house? Like, how has it been stored? What methods can we use? And, you know, figuring out the solution, in parallel with all of the stakeholders, you know, even though at the face of it, you know, we're just slinging license, CMS licenses. So that's really always been, that's our heritage. Mm-hmm. And when I'm, when I start talking to, someone who's interested in looking at the market, or you get a lead, or you're talking to someone at a trade show, my advice is always to, you know, take a look at a bunch of companies, look at all these CMSs, but in all the, you know, in the old guard, right? Like there's a, you know, a good handful of companies that, I might as well say some names, right? When, you know, Navori, for example, Stratacache, Scala, right? They're all pretty old guard. You know, when we talk about the digital signage industry, you know, I encourage people to take a look at all the products that are on the market. And once you start to, you know, get those demos and, you start to go through the sales process, you can really see the DNA of where that company's come from, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is that company, are they focused on a really, you know, pleasant UX, UI experience? Are they focused on performing, you know, high-end post-processing within the platform itself? Are they good at asset generation, right? As opposed to creating it in a third-party piece of kit and bringing it in. Our DNA has always been on the data side. Our tool, you know, our position is that if you're going to make good images and, you know, assets that you're going to bring into the CMS, you know, trying to ask a creative to use a tool that's not something they're already comfortable with, you know, you're kind of paddling upstream on that. So we've always taken the position of like, you know, let people use the software that they're already comfortable with. Let's not introduce a knowledge gap, bring it in. So, and that leads us to, well, if we're not going to focus on the asset side, let's focus on the data side. So yeah, that's where we've come from. And it's, you know, where our, you know, goals are set for in the future as well.
Well, when you have literally hundreds of software options out there these days, and I would suspect most of them in some way say, yes, we do data handling, we have data integration, we have APIs or whatever it may be, how does an end user discern what's real versus just, you know, the bare essentials?
It's a good question. The user, or, you know, when they're going through that sales process and they're doing their comparisons, they have to show you it working, right? Like, we're in an industry that is, you know, extremely visual, very creative. And, you know, you and I have been to a lot of trade shows and a lot of DSEs in our time. You know, and if you're walking around there on setup day, I've seen plenty of CMS vendors running their show reel on Windows Media Player, right? Before the crowds arrive. Yeah. And it's like, well, if your stuff's that good, why are you using that? Like, why are you doing it that way? So, you know, if I was a buyer, right? Or if I was, you know, a third party consultant, you know, trying to guide someone through this, I'd be like, the first couple of calls you're going to have with them, you're going to get the dog and pony show, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to show you all the, you know, all the sexy stuff, right? Oh yeah, all works great. Da, da, da. You want to bring this plugin, da, da, da. Get your IT team involved, right? The people who know where your data lives and mm-hmm. what format it's in, how accessible it is, and get them to sit down with the sales engineers of these CMS companies and get them to POC and get your data into their product, right? Most CMSs at this point, they're cloud hosted, they're software as a service, right? If they're sitting there and they're saying, this is really easy, we can just go bing, bam, bop, and it comes in. All right, then show me. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, don't accept it at face value if you really want to dig into this stuff. I don't know any software vendor out there that isn't going to entertain the idea of a proof of concept, or at least won't say, yeah, sure. You know, like any salesperson wants to get the sale, right? So,
sure.
You know what? Client, if you've got this accessible data, right? Let's say it's up on, you know, Azure, right? It's in some kind of blob storage, or if it's accessible through an API, can you just give me the keys, like let me in, and I'll show you it in real time, and then we'll bring it in. Once they can prove that to you, then it's not about data accessibility anymore. Then you need to start looking into the assurances that they're going to be ethical, and they're going to have the same levels of governance and control over that data that is being ingested into their system.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of our focus is now. And you've really kind of touched on that with APIs. You know, back in the 90s, when we were asked to integrate with all these different data sources, you know, we were lucky if there was documentation. It was probably RS-232, serial cables.
Mm-hmm.
That's a term
I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, using Telnet to get in. So like a lot of the solution building was, you know, just kind of banging your head against the wall just to even access the data and make it legible to sanitizing that data, processing that data into information and then getting that information down onto the screen. That is less of a concern now because we're at the point where any data provider, they've probably got a fully or semi-documented API, or they've got an SDK, a software development kit, where, you know, we can, you know, for the most part, if we're looking to POC a data integration, it probably takes us, you know, 2 to 4 hours, right? You know, based on how well documented it is, if the data structure is, you know, easy to work with. And more often than not, the biggest, the part that takes the most time is liaising with the third party organization to let us in, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, the client, you know, they'll say, oh yeah, you know, we use such and such for this. And, you know, let's say, we're using this product for our bus timetables, our bus scheduling. Can you guys hit that? So it's like, well, you know, there's a good chance we've already hit it because, you know, we've got clients there already. But if we haven't, then we need to start up an engagement and start talking to that third party organization. This is the sticking point, right? Because when we start talking to that third party organization that controls that data that the client is already paying for and leveraging in-house,
mm-hmm.
Depending on the attitude and market position of that third party, they might not want to let us in, right? Like there's a bunch of organizations out there that sell digital signage as a value add, right? So, you know, a good example of that would be, you know, the historic vendors for flight information display systems, right? The screens mm-hmm. in airports showing arrivals and departures.
Yep.
They sold data, and the screen element was like, oh, and by the way, you probably want to show this on a screen, right? So we'll just sell you that too. Mm-hmm. It's a value add. It's not a true CMS. It's a point solution,
right?
So when we're engaging with that third party vendor, and I'm often at the head end of this for transportation. It's I'm like, hey, we're working on this project with a mutual client. They want us to get into your data. Is there any way you can provide a sandbox or some test keys so we can just prove this out? Depending on where they're at, they might not want to let us in. So the sticking point becomes then I have to go back to the client and say to the client, I don't want to cause any friction here, but we can't get in without credentials and, you know, they're not giving us any. So can mm-hmm. you please get involved? And those are the conversations where, things start getting political. We're not looking to roll logs under or cause friction anywhere. But as far as I'm concerned, your client's already paying for the data, right? Like if you want to bolt on some charges for, hey, now you're using it for digital signage, so we want to charge you an extra $5,000 a year, that's on you. But mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned, you know, the data's paying an existing client, they're paying for the data, you know, they want to use it this way, you're standing in the way of progress here. So, how do we deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
I spend so much time dealing with that now. And it's, you know, a reaction to that, about 5 years ago, I started a, basically a Skunkworks team internally here in order to proactively build data partnerships so that when a client, says, a key phrase, right? Everbridge is a good example, right? For mass emergency notifications. So when a client says Everbridge, I don't have to, we don't have to go through that, uncertain process of, reaching out to someone we don't know, not knowing what their position is. It's like, yeah, we've actually already got this working somewhere else. We can get in here. I can show you an example of it already working. Mm-hmm. Or, we can, if you can give us access, we can actually prove it with your data. So
I've seen companies that talk in terms of what I call functionality apps, so that they developed a data handshake with, as you said, Everbridge, and then they sort of market that as an application. This is something that we can activate for you. Is that how you look at it, or is that kind of a different angle?
We look at it that way, conceptually, because it's modularity, right? So, in our product, like, we're going to use a mechanism to reach out to that. That could be through some custom scripting, or it could be within a product in our stable that has a full UI in order to access that data. Like, a good example would be, back in the day, we had a Avaya link for Avaya phone systems, right? So, with that functionality, that some organizations call them widgets, right? Where it's like, hey, I just want to slot in this functionality. It's a couple of clicks. I put in my username, put in my password, and away we go. We operate that in the back end of the system. But we, at this point, we don't have like full kind of walkthroughs where it's like, hey, put in your Twitter put in your Twitter username and password, and away you go. Ours is a little bit more behind the curtain. And we do it that way because, we have user personalities. We actually used to use the Simpsons characters too. Are we dealing with a Bart? Are we dealing with a Maggie? Like who are we dealing with here? So those user profiles, is like, well, who should be doing this, right? And if, when we're looking at building out a data integration, that should really be set it and forget it. There really is no reason to go in there, on a regular basis and be changing that information or that query or the way we're massaging the data. So that is a administrative function, right? That is something that's behind the scenes. By virtue of that, we're probably dealing with someone who's a bit more technical, has a bit of an IT background. So we have a relatively open system, right? So whereas when we're dealing with widgets and a simplified user experience, click this button, put your username in, click this button, put your password in, click this, it comes on screen, and now you can kind of like trim that down. Like that, that's what I've seen some CMSs do it. And I think that's, a really like low friction way to get that data in there. We take the approach we're a toolkit. We're going to assume that our users, that our clients and our channel are matching our product and our toolkit to the right levels of user. So in the back end, it's like, hey, here's a fully open interface that you can do whatever the heck you want with. We can give you some foundational building blocks or modules to enable, empower that user to take it where they want to take it. And that speaks to kind of one of our other positions in the industry, where it's like, anyone who's been around kind of knows that, OmniVex kind of deal with like relatively complex situations because we've got that wide open back end that frankly is a bit scary, right? To a user that, just wants to change a welcome board or, change some numbers that are on a restaurant board, right? So that's really not our target market, right? Yeah. Our target market is, predominantly enterprise level. They've got an in-house IT team, or they've got a good system integrator involved where we can really like get into the weeds on what data you have. Data has a cost, right? Well, organizations are paying to cultivate it, gather it, store it in-house. How do we make that data actionable, by adding incremental value to it? That's what we're looking for. So when we go into a situation, we want to find those people, those stakeholders within the end client and within our channel to get into those deeper discussions on like, okay, well, I know you want to, point an arrow to the right, but if we look at what data you've got in-house, like let's say they've got, a modern elevator system or a modern escalator system where we're able to tie into the back end of, hey, on a Monday, this elevator serves floors 8 through 12. But on weekends or on bank holidays, that elevator is completely shut off. Well, okay, then I probably don't want that arrow to go right when that elevator is offline. I want it to point straight ahead, like let's say 0 degrees rotation, right, instead of 90 degrees rotation. So if we don't have an awareness of what data the client has, and the client doesn't have the kind of persona or has the team in house that knows how their systems work and how they're architected and what data they have, then they might not be the best fit for the kind of challenges we're looking to tackle.
You're doing a lot more than changing a price or the soup of the day.
Yeah, that's the table stakes, right? I mean, like honestly, as much as it's a bad word in our industry, but if you really want to go down that, PowerPoint's able to do that now, right? Like you can integrate PowerPoint with Excel, like so I know it's ever since I've been in the industry, we're all like, you're always kind of one step away from someone saying, well, why wouldn't I just use PowerPoint for that? Yeah. Right? Well, it's like, well, you're missing a whole bunch of functionality on top of it. But, fundamentally, right, any CMS worth its salt has, two core elements that it needs to play with, right? It needs to play with data and it needs to bring in assets and, basically input those, two elements into a layout, right? So by that definition, can PowerPoint do it? Yeah, if we really, really boil it down, but there's so much value on top of with any of these systems, right? So, but getting to that data, exploring the data with the clients, is where our ROI comes in, right? And that's a scary term for a lot of people in this industry too. I honestly think, digital signage was really looking for ROI metrics for like what feels like 20 years. We were really struggling.
Yes.
ROI only really start to get metrics around that in certain fields, right? So really easy to establish ROI when, we've got a camera pointed to the audience, we're looking at expressions and demographics and we're triggering it and we're detecting when eyeballs are looking this way. So ROI on that, really easy. You want me to give you ROI on a wayfinding arrow changing from 0 degrees to 90 degrees? That's going to be a bit more obfuscated, but maybe you're going to see that down the road when you have an independent audit on your facility and your KPIs go, I shifted 5 points because your space is a lot more usable now, right? So adding incremental value on that data is really what we're looking to do. You mentioned menu boards. Menu boards is a real quick win. It's very transparent. It's, the value of that is very clear. But when we start to talk around, passenger flow around an airport or, like nudge theory, convincing people to, move one way instead of another way because that benefits the operations of the environment. That is a little bit more tricky to prove ROI on, but the people that, the humans walking around that space are going to have less friction and less stress while they're in there. But it really all comes down to, weaponizing the data. Like, how do we get the most out of, how do we turn data into information?
For over a decade, ScreenFeed has been the reliable choice for beautifully designed, licensed content such as news and weather. We handle over 27 million requests a day to deliver dynamic content to 200,000 screens across the globe. Now we bring you ScreenFeed Connect, a no-code solution that makes complex content projects easy. Projects that used to take our designers and developers weeks became a to-do we could complete before lunch. The easy-to-use browser-based tool leverages pre-built data connections and ready-made widgets to give you the power to design with data. Create team member profiles, schedules, tenant directories, progress boards, featured products, or anything that leverages your data. Discover how Connect empowers you to complete projects faster at screenfeed.com.
I could ask a bunch of questions, but we could probably talk for about 3 hours. I'm curious about a big job that you were directly involved in, and OmniVex was obviously directly involved in, at Minneapolis Airport, which is considered one of the better airports on the planet now. And what's all involved there? Because there's a lot of data handling and a lot more going on than just saying that the flight to Seattle is at gate 47.
Yeah, there is a lot going on at MSP. And just to give them a quick shout out, they've actually, MSP just won best airport in North America for the third year running. I think that came out a couple of days back. And I think they've won it seven times out of the last 8 years. They've got a really, they've got a dedicated team in house that, you know, takes care of this stuff. And I really want to focus on not OmniVex for a second here, because, you know, the airport deserves to be called out here.
Yeah.
And so does us. We've got a system integrator in there called Radiant Technology as well, out of Columbus, Ohio. And the success there really started with the vision of their CIO, Eduardo Valencia. He was directly inspired by sports stadiums, right? And he was personally quite frustrated that when he went to, you know, a sports stadium, how come when, you know, they, you know, the puck goes in the net, the whole stadium changes color and everything goes whiz bang, and all of a sudden I'm being advertised, you know, Coca-Cola, and like, why do my screens in my airport suck? But I'm able to see this when I go to a hockey game, right? So yeah. There's got it. So he used certain mechanisms to, you know, figure out, like, you know, what's going on in the industry and who's able to, you know, power these sorts of full experiences within a facility, and that thankfully, you know, led him to us. So it really started, you know, with that frustration, and they took a strategic view at the airport, where you'll hear Eduardo talk about, you know, the entire airport should just be treated as a single plane of glass, and I should be able to control any screen in the airport any way that I want. In order to, which is a great ambition, and a lot of facilities, it's not just airports, a lot of facilities have a similar ambition, and it's very easy to start with that, you know, that dream. But it's not going to happen unless you align resources in-house. So, you know, MSP have their own decision-making panel for digital signage, right? They've got a group in-house that is responsible for pushing this forward. Nothing good, nothing worthwhile, nothing award-winning happens by accident, right? Like, you know, they've taken a real pragmatic approach to this. So they took a look at their screen estate. They took a look at the use cases, they took a look at their data, and, you know, they engaged that system integrator I mentioned, Radiant, to like be like, all right, how do we make good on all this stuff? So it started from the top, right, which kept teams engaged, it kept them focused, and that's why this is a success. So, you know, we're a part of that, we're a foundational piece of technology in there, but we're really just a toolkit, right? Like, and it speaks to what I mentioned before about, hey, our back end might be a little bit scary, but you can do whatever the heck you want. That's the power of a toolkit, right? So, and that, you know, to go back to what you mentioned about, you know, that widget and that usability, like, you know, you can have a really like turbo linear workflow, But that really hamstrings capabilities, right? So when you're making a product, you've got to decide which way do you want to go. Mm-hmm. Do I want to sell the, you know, do I want to go a mile wide and an inch deep, or do I want to go real deep where the scary stuff lives?
Yeah.
You know, that's where we typically are, right? Where we're the, you know, where we're the anglerfish. So so that was MSP's approach. And you know, they that example I mentioned about, like, what are the elevators doing? What are the escalators doing? You know, what's happening operationally right now within my airport? So that's where you start. Like, what's happening right now? Okay, so what's happening now? Well, I've got Delta Airlines have these check-in counters open. Okay, so, well, I know my building. I know where those check-in counters are. So the screens that are directly parallel at the curbside to those check-in counters, then let people pulling up in their cars know, hey, if you want to go Delta, there's a big Delta logo and it says open underneath it. Okay.
And particularly airports that are dynamically assigning check-in counters for, you know, smaller airlines, right?
For sure, yeah. Multi-use environments. So, you know, when we're, yeah. So there's always going to be situations where, like, oh yeah, that, you know, that terminal, that's United's terminal, right? So, like, there's no real variance there, but there's a whole bunch of smaller airlines and they call it common use. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, you know, we've got systems where, you know, let's say, you know, a smaller airline, you know, logs in, like, you know, one example could be Flair. I don't, it's not around anymore, right? But, you know, Flair could log in. Okay. Well, they've only got two flights a day, but they need to take over this, ticket counter. They need to take over this gate temporarily. So when they log into the common use platform, which is what's on those screens in front of those agents, when they log into that common use platform, by virtue of them logging in, I know who they are, right? And I know that they work for Flair. So now it makes sense to change the screens that are, you know, physically behind that desk, you know, put up the default content for Flair right now, because until this agent makes some decisions around the, you know, this screen's going to be the backdrop, this screen's going to be priority, you know, check-in or whatever, maybe we just want to highlight that this is Flair's house now. Mm-hmm. And then as they go through their login procedure, you know, the screens can set up any way that, you know, they like. And what we can do is we can provide dashboards and linear use case tools that make it easy for that user. That's where things should be easy, right? Where someone's interacting with digital signage as, you know, this is not their job, right? Like, their job is to make sure that they're processing passengers and getting them into where they need to be. You know, there might be really high turnover. They have no interest or time to be trained on how to use a content management product. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so look at that requirement, right? So what do I need to do? I probably need to present the screens that are behind them. I need to present to them the assets that are available to them. And I need them to highlight which flight that they care about right now. That could all be manual. So their experience is like, okay, I'm Neil. I've logged in. I'm at Flair. Bang, screens change. Okay, I've got four screens behind me. What do you want on each one of these screens? I want to do image one, image three, and image five. Instantly goes up on the screens behind them. All right, I'm done. So that's where it's really important to reduce that friction and make it easy. Not necessarily on when we're setting up the data flow, right? Because, you know, again, I'm only really going to be setting up that data flow once and then maybe changing it when upstream data sources change. That experience for that airline agent, that is multiple times a day. That's where we need it to be frictionless, not on the data integration side.
I think it's interesting with airports and other large footprint facilities like, you know, mass transport hubs, stadiums, multi-use areas where, you know, there's a stadium, there's restaurants, there's residential, there's commercial, on and on and on. And airports in particular, I kind of see two threads to how experience works. I see these, you know, gorgeous, very ambitious, very expensive digital art installations and giant LED walls in new build airports. And they talk about the experience of that and how people are going to feel good about flying and so on. But I see this whole other side, and it is much more what you're talking about of a great experience at an airport is not being panicked, not being lost, not being delayed, not knowing where things are, all that sort of stuff. And to me, that's a far more important experience. Is that kind of how you see it and how some of your clients see it?
There's a few hats I could wear on this. The first hat I'll wear is, as someone who wants to sell as many licenses as possible, I would rather they have 1,000 flat panel screens, right? Yeah. But that...
Than one big LED video wall.
Yeah, but that's not where the industry's going, right? And, you know, that... The big reason for that is just, you know, we've, as an industry, we've watched the price of DV LED really just go through the floor.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, there's real comparisons where it's like, you know, is this at parity with like a 55-inch flat panel now for me to get a DV LED, like a modular DV LED, the same price? So that's a huge part of it. It's like the cost has finally come down to a point where it's reasonable at scale. But a lot of it is also just straight up hype. Right? Like airports, like anyone else, have to sell and compete with other airports. And this is something that you don't really think about until you get into it. But, you know, when you've got two airports that are within an hour's drive of each other, right? They're not only competing for passengers, they're competing for the airlines.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, if I'm, you know, courting with the idea of trying to bring a major airline, you know, like, you know, two that are right next to each other, but a good comparison would be like SFO and Oakland, right? So it's like, okay, well, if I'm at Oakland, how do I convince people not to go over the bridge to SFO? And how do I, well, I probably need, you know, the carriers that carry the most passengers. Okay,
or San Jose.
Oh, yeah, good example. Yeah. So that's how I need to. So a lot of these big, you know, sexy installations are coming from, you got to keep up with the Joneses. But also the price of DV LED is reasonable now. So there is that part of the market where it's all about, you know, the LinkedIn posts and the marketing and the wow factor. You're exactly right. So there'll be like a handful of those within an airport, right? Like a good example would be Nashville. We worked on a project with Nashville Airport and the content that provided that for that was Gentle Homme out of Montreal.
Gentle Homme, yeah.
Where they all are, right? So you know, they provided that. They did an awesome job. But that is just one. It's essentially two screens in probably an estate of I think about 800 or so, like that. So you know, the big glitzy installations are now basically a requirement for any new build or any renovation for any airport. You know, there's a couple of projects that I'm aware of that are, you know, really like interesting. But in terms of decision making, right? Like when I come back down to the fundamental goal of signage in general, not just digital, is to, you know, convey information quickly and clearly guide decision making in an environment. Is, you know, this generative AI artwork doing that? No, it's not going to help me get to my flight on time, but it might, you know, bring down my, you know, my blood pressure a little bit, which is what a lot of these are. That's what these art installations are, right? Like they're looking for, they're an opportunity for facilities to express themselves, you know, get their, you know, reinforce their branding, you know, market the local area, but also sell advertising, right? Which is a huge driving factor on some of these big installations too. So like, so yeah, there's very much like there's the, you know, let's call them the anchors, right? Like they're the anchor installations now, where, you know, there's millions and millions of dollars being spent. And then, you know, it's why I've always kind of enjoyed your outlook and your material, Dave, is like, you like the boring stuff, and that's what I'm into as well. And when I'm walking around the world, that's the stuff that I'm like, oh, that is cool as hell. One of the best bits of boring signage at MSP, and good design is invisible, right? So there's an underground walkway. It's not a walkway; it's more like a hallway, but it's very much a liminal space. And you're going under there. It's probably about, I'm trying to imagine putting my hand up, it's probably about 10 feet tall, this space. So it's like, well, there's not much opportunity for overhead signage because, you know, we can only really add probably about 8 inches to this, like overhead. Mm-hmm. So that team worked with a display vendor and they put in, it's roughly around, it's about 100 or so feet wide. Well, no, I'm probably over-egging it. It's probably about 80 feet wide. About 80 feet wide by about 7 inches high. So number one, okay, well, we're not, we're still compliant with safety and we've got this screen in this hallway now. Cool. What's great about it is it's pure wayfinding. All it does is just show people where they need to go. But upstream of this, this very boring sign is, I would estimate 2,500 data points in order to get the arrows pointing the right way, showing, you're looking for, you're looking for this airline, or you're looking for a route with accessibility, or you're looking for the TSA, the security line with when you add together the time to get to the queue plus the queue time, which way should you go? Mm-hmm. What condition are the elevators in? What condition are the escalators in? Where, as an airport, do I want to drive people right now based on what's going on in my space? All that intelligence is above that sign.
Yeah.
Logically. And but as a passenger, I look at it and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going with Air Canada today. Boom, I'm done.
Yeah.
But the solution is so complex behind it. But ultimately, it just means, hey, this logo appears on screen and this arrow is at 220 degrees. Mm-hmm. And that boils down to that. And I think that use case is beautiful. Like it's simplicity in design. It gets rid of the friction. It gets people where they need to be. That's what we're in this business for.
But the bottom line on that is it looks simple to the end user, to the observer, but there's a lot going on behind the curtains to make that work and seamless.
Again, good design is invisible, right? Like you would have no idea the complexity that goes on with that screen.
Like I said, we could talk for a very long time, but we're already running longer than I usually do, so I gotta wind this down. Neil, this has been great.
Thanks, Dave. OmniVex has been around a long time. I've been around a long time. You've been around a long time. I'm surprised. I'm surprised we've not got to this earlier. But thanks so much. I really respect what 69 and what you've done for the industry. And I encourage you to keep at it. We need a rational voice in this craziness, man.
All right. Well, thanks again.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave. Take care.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 69 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 16-9 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 16-9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16-9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 16-9, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.